final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Switch gears. Talk a little hockey. Our buddy Scott Burnside from The Athletic does a great job covering the league. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me aboard. And I'm actually at a hockey rink, so you may hear the odd puck hitting the glass and just to create, you know, just I'm sure you're missing that sound of, you know, the rink ambiance. So there you go.
Oh, yeah, we would never say that we want to hear those. We welcome those sounds. That would be great. Perfect in the background. Let's start with round two has started. Let's start with the first game that we took in Saturday night. Stars and Avalanche on the big national platform of NBC. Got to be honest, a little eye-opening on how the Stars look. They really took it to the Avalanche. Grubauer goes down. I was watching live when that happened. I realize he got injured in the regular season. How do you think that's going to affect them? They've already ruled him out. How do you think that's going to affect them moving forward?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, and, you know, part of the, you know, I don't know whether it's a problem, but it's certainly the reality of this playoff season and how it's unfolded is that, you know, with the game so late on the, out of the Edmonton bubble, those games start at, you know, 9:45 Central or 10:45 Eastern. Man, sometimes you feel like you miss some of the stuff. And I think maybe people might have missed where Dallas was, you know, how they got to where they are right now in terms of knocking off Calgary in six games and now facing a Colorado team that, that probably on paper is much stronger. But your point's a great one because though Grubauer went down, it doesn't sound like they expect him back any time. Pavel Francouz, I've just learned to say that properly, by the way, is a guy that will be unknown to, you know, to lots of hockey fans. I've talked to a couple of goaltending, former goaltenders and analysts. They say he's the real deal. Now, I thought he looked a little shaky coming in relief, maybe expected, after Grubauer went down. But I do think that Francouz is going to give the Avs very solid goaltending. And it does set an interesting matchup because, of course, Ben Bishop has not been seen for days with the Dallas Stars. So it's Anton Khudobin carrying the load for the Stars. So it really is a battle of the backups. And good for the Stars to get off to an early victory there. You know, they don't match up depth-wise probably offensively. But, man, they've got lots of interesting pieces. And I think, you know, a guy like Joe Pavelski who came in the offseason has a ton of experience. Corey Perry, of course, former Stanley Cup winner and one of the league's great agitators. Of course, Preds fans will remember him fondly or less fondly maybe from playoff series in the past. But the Stars have a lot of sand, and I think this series is going to be fascinating. I don't think it's going to be over anytime soon. Plus, you get the bonus of maybe two of the brightest young defensive stars in the NHL, like Miro Heiskanen of the Stars and Cale Makar of the Avs. Those guys are going to carry the water for both those teams for many years to come. And I can expect you'll see them in Norris Trophy debates for a long time, maybe starting as early as next season.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're in the Predators division, so we've had a good look at those guys. So they're no surprise to us. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to come out of left field with this one. And I probably shouldn't use a baseball reference when talking hockey. But if I were to put you on the spot here and say today, Scott Burnside, if you could draft, if you could have one player in the league and start up your franchise. I had this discussion over the weekend. This is why I'm bringing it up, and I'm curious to know where you go with this. Who would the player be and why if you were to start up a franchise today and take their body work? It's today. It's not what they've done. It's not their resume. It's today and moving forward. What would be your answer?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it would be hard to go away from either Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon. You know, given just where they are, to me they're 1-2 in terms of the NHL centers at, you know, current level of play, and given their, you know, experience, they're still both pretty young. But I'll tell you, I think when you look at some of the young defensemen in the NHL. I watch Victor Hedman. Now, he's not young, and so maybe he might be a little bit older than you would want. And I'm hedging by naming, like, 20 different guys before I give you one. But I would tell you, you know what? I might go out on the edge, since this is a left field question. You know the guy that's most impressed me so far through the first round and a little bit of the second round? Is Seth Jones. And, you know, he's not going to win the Norris this year. I think Roman Yossi's got that locked up, and John Carlson is going to finish second. That would be my guess. I'm trying to think where Seth Jones ended up on my ballot. Top five for sure. But just the way he played against Toronto and then in just an incredible five-game series against Tampa. It felt like he went 13 games. But Seth Jones is a guy I would want all day long. I just love his personality. I love how he plays. He's an extraordinary athlete, and he's an extraordinary young defenseman. So I'm gonna filter my way around, and I'm coming back to Seth Jones. That's where I'm starting right now.
Okay. See, that's why I think it's a fascinating question. I had a buddy of mine pose that to me, and we had a really interesting discussion on that because I think there's a lot of places you could go. I told him I thought most people would say Connor McDavid because he's kind of got, you know, the recognition, and that's where people tend to gravitate. Obviously, you know, Roman Yossi here, you know, boy, he, you know, there's none better. He should win the Norris, because he is the best defenseman. I get it, we're a little biased, but there's Seth Jones is fantastic. He's a younger guy, so I could get that. But I went with, I mean, I know he's not good. He's great. I get it. I already knew he's great. I think I've just watched more closely than maybe I ever have. And Nathan MacKinnon is just ridiculous. I just think he is just an unstoppable force. And so I gave my reasons on why I would start with MacKinnon. I just would. I would build a franchise around him. I just think he just does whatever he wants to do. He blows me away. Like I said, I already knew he was great, but I've focused on him a little bit more. And I'm like, gosh, he's just ridiculously great. So that was my answer.
Yeah, well, and listen, there's no way you can go wrong with that. And you know, for me, it's the way, there's a personality about these players too, right? It's not just the raw skill, but it's also, it's been interesting watching Miro Heiskanen too, just how, you know, that Dallas Stars team has become his team. MacKinnon is the abs, right? Everything feeds from him. So those are the kinds of players you want, right? Those are the cornerstone players that if you're an NHL coach and GM, that's who you want in your locker room. Guys want to play with guys like Nathan MacKinnon. They want to play well. They want to, you know, they want to be around him, guys like that. So I don't think you can go wrong at all with Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. This is the first bit of adversity for the Avs this year, and the expectations are extremely high. Like, I still think it's likely maybe that you see a Vegas-Colorado West final, and man, how much fun would that be? But if the Avs are going to get there, they're going to get there on the back of Nathan MacKinnon. So I applaud your decision. I don't think you shouldn't be ashamed of that.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed. I have even more respect for him. Like I said, just watch him a little bit closer. I just think there's times when he just does. I feel like he does whatever he wants to do out there, and that's so incredibly hard to do at this level.
Well, yes, and then I think, you know, again, it's he's a player that's interesting because, you know, that it came out of that terrific draft class and a lot of discussion about, you know, where, you know, would they go with Seth Jones, you know, given his connection to the community, and it took him. Like, I'm trying to think, was 2 or 3 years? Like, it wasn't an instant thing for Nathan MacKinnon because that franchise was going through some upheaval. You know, Patrick Roy was there, and then he left. And, you know, there was some, it was kind of like, well, I don't know. Is he really going to be all that? But he did, you know, he get it. He gets it. He worked at it very diligently. And you'll see now this is a franchise that should be, you know, they should be in the Stanley Cup hunt now every year for the next 5 or 6 years because he's that good.
Talking to Scott Burnside from The Athletic. Scott, I don't know if I've ever seen in any sport an agent do anything close to what I saw Alan Walsh do with the post of the picture with the sword in the back. That was so bizarre. What did you make of that? I thought Marc-Andre Fleury said all the right things, handled about as well as he could, but what was he thinking?
I got to tell you, I would look at that picture every single day for the rest of my life because it's so, you're right. I mean, it just is no, it does defy description. It defies words in some ways. And it's, listen, I don't know how big a deal it is. And listen, I watched closely that Vegas Vancouver game, just because you wonder, okay, you know, what will happen? A, because it's two interesting teams, very talented, but you're also wondering in the fallout from Alan Walsh's tweet with the sword, and it's not just the bloody sword; it's the bloody sword with Pete DeBoer's name on it, the head coach.
Yes,
and jammed through Marc-Andre Fleury's back. You just wondered if there would be some sort of evidence that it was unsettling somehow to the team or to Robin Leonard, who got the start again last night for the Golden Knights. And of course, there wasn't any of that. Golden Knights dominated a really good Vancouver team. Leonard pitches a shutout. It's like, okay, it doesn't, you know, like it doesn't really matter. And I think that's probably the best possible outcome for Marc-Andre Fleury, for Robin Leonard, for the Golden Knights, pretty much everyone but Vancouver. And I expect it will go away very quickly. I did talk to a number of people. Listen, Alan Walsh is very, you know, he's a very big personality within the agents world. He has never been shy about saying what he's thought. He's been very critical of the NHL during work stoppages. He's fiercely loyal, obviously, to his clients, loves to tweet when they're doing well. If he feels they're being mistreated, he's also not shy to say that. You know, the timing, I don't really get it. And I'd like to think that Marc-Andre Fleury had no idea that this was coming. Because if he knew it was coming, that's kind of lousy, right? Like if he knew that this was the plan. Because at this stage of the playoffs, what's the last thing that you want as a team is to have this kind of potential distraction and disruption. Now, it doesn't look like it's going to be an issue there if Marc-Andre Fleury gets to play at some point, and I imagine he will, given the back-to-backs in the playoff schedule now in the bubble cities. You know, you hope that he rises to the occasion. All of my dealings with Marc-Andre Fleury have been extremely positive. He is one of the most loved players I've ever come across. Loved him in Pittsburgh. They love him in Vegas. He's the face of that franchise. I get that he's disappointed that he's not playing every night, but you're right. It was off the charts. And, you know, if they go on and win a Stanley Cup, it'll be an interesting footnote. But I will always look at that picture and go, wow, that was one crazy Sunday afternoon.
He put Fleury in a terrible position. And Fleury, like you said, is such a class act. He was able to smooth it over and not add fuel to the fire. I do wonder, Scott, the picture aside, when they traded for Robin Leonard, did they have a mindset that Leonard could challenge and maybe even take the job from Fleury? When they made that trade, my thought was at the time, this is just insurance because Fleury has been such an overworked goalie in this day and time. At his age, they never felt good about the backups that they had for him. And so I thought it made sense from that standpoint. But did you think that they were envisioning this possibility, that Leonard could actually be a better option for them in the playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have any doubt about that. And I think you're right on the, you hit the nail right on the head. Listen, you know, a year ago, I felt they should have got goaltending depth or support at the trade deadline a year ago. It didn't happen. This is not a slight against Malcolm Subban, who, you know, showed at times that maybe he was ready to be a viable NHL backup. But Marc-Andre Fleury played too much. He got hurt towards the end of last regular season, came back, was never quite the same, wasn't quite good enough in the first round, that chaotic first round against San Jose that ended in, oh, I want to say double overtime in Game 7, but certainly in the controversial Game 7 in overtime. He was never quite good enough. And there were moments this year where, again, his play was not as we've expected from Marc-Andre Fleury, and they really didn't have a plan B. So, and when Robin Leonard got there, I talked to a number of people who watched that team closely, and, you know, when we got back to return to play and training camp, and there were a lot of people who were like, if they're going straight on who is playing the best right now, it's Robin Leonard. And I think the fact that Pete DeBoer, who came from San Jose to Vegas mid-season when Gerard Gallant was shockingly fired by the Golden Knights, again, he's got no loyalty to Marc-Andre Fleury, in the way that he doesn't have loyalty to anyone else in that roster except the ones that are going to give them the best chance to win, right? Like, if Gerard Gallant was still there, maybe they go to a different goaltender to start the playoffs. Maybe Marc-Andre Fleury starts because it's Marc-Andre Fleury and this is his team and took them to the final in 18. Pete DeBoer doesn't have that history or that baggage. He started the best goalie he had in front of him in his own mind, and it's hard to argue with those results right now. So I'm not really surprised that we've come to this point.
Scott, your colleague, Katie Strang at The Athletic, a very eloquent opinion piece on Mike Milbury that we had said a lot of the same things right, the same day that she put that out. Do you think this is the end of Mike Milbury at NBC?
Yeah, it's interesting. And listen, I've known Katie a long time. We've worked together at ESPN. She is an absolute marvel. And if you haven't read her column about Mike Milbury's comments, you should go and do that right now. And it is, it's hard to imagine that he could come back from this. And, it's disappointing. And the worst part is it's probably not the worst thing he said this playoff year, right? An offhand comment about the lack of fans at women's hockey games and, just stuff that there's no place for it now. And thank goodness, it took some time, didn't happen right away, but I'm glad that NBC, I'm glad that the NHL, there was a response to it, and the fact that, Mike Milbury, walked away or was pushed away out of the Toronto bubble is absolutely the right call. And it is hard to imagine him coming back and rejoining that panel. And, it is time to move on, right? It's time to have people on there that don't think that way. That think in a broader, in a more purposeful and positive way. I don't think there's a room for those kind of people anywhere, and certainly not on a national broadcast like NBC as a national U.S. partner to the National Hockey League. So I can't imagine a scenario under which he comes back.
We're talking to Scott Burnside of The Athletic here on Darren Donick and Chase. Wanted to get your opinion on what you think John Hines might do with his coaching staff. It was announced last week Dan Muse, an assistant, will not be brought back. His contract will not be renewed. We know there are some names available. There are some connections to Hines from New Jersey. But how do you think he shapes his coaching staff now that he'll have a full offseason? Well, a weird offseason, but a full offseason in training camp to put it all together.
Yeah, I don't really have a sense for what John will be looking for. I do know, I've been reading some of the stories and the comments around the Predators about what has to happen. And listen, that's 2 years in a row where you watch them in the playoffs, and really does seem like a team that has lost its way, that has lost its identity, and it goes back to, I know David Poile has talked about this. This is a team that for years and years, when they were successful, it was because they had an identity of working hard and being, never being out-prepared, never being outworked. And that has gone away. It just has. And so if that means finding, members to augment or complement your coaching staff that allow you to get back to that identity, I think that's important. I mean, so the bottom line is, though, you can talk about identity, you can have the coaching staff that you want, implement the systems, but if the players can't play that way, and it seems right now that this lineup, the way it's constituted right now, is going to struggle to play that way, then that's hard. That's going to be a hard track to follow. So, I wonder, and certainly if you're a Preds fan, you hope that you can find a way back to that identity, and it does start at the top, and it starts with coaching and systems, all those kinds of things, but you do have to have people who buy in, and right now I think you have to ask yourself whether you've got a lineup that really buys into wanting to play that hard to have the kind of success that this team deserves.
The Capitals have shown Todd Reardon the door after a couple of seasons, so how much egg do they have on their face after Barry Trotz wins them the Stanley Cup? They ultimately can't come to an agreement. He goes to the Islanders, and then they get knocked out by the Islanders and Reardon is out of a job. What do you make of that whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a great backstory to that series. And if you watch the very brief moment when Todd Reardon and Barry Trotz interact after the end of Game 5, it's clear that, you know, that there may still be some lingering hard feelings or whatever. And, you know, you have to go back and I understood why all of what happened in Washington in 2017-18, why it happened and how it happened. I think Barry Trotz had decided he was going to be somewhere else regardless of what happened at the end of that 18 season. In fact, they won a Stanley Cup and he walked away days after is, I it's easy to blame the Capitals. Why didn't you keep him? You know, they have their own structure. They have their reasons why they didn't extend Barry Trotz before that season. They have a budget. They couldn't come to an agreement with Barry Trotz. You know, in hindsight, should they have paid him whatever that he wanted to be paid and given him the term that he wanted for security for his family? Well, sure, in hindsight, probably should have done that. But I understand why they did what they did. I understand why Barry went where he went, and the success there has been obvious. So, this is a Caps team now that, you know, that's two straight seasons, one and done. This is window time, right? The window now, you know, is very much inching closed on a great team that won a Stanley Cup. You'll never take that away from them, but man, there have been a lot of missteps along the way for such a talented organization, and it will be interesting to see who comes in there next. I would not be surprised if it's a guy like Peter Laviolette, because they want someone who has an edge to him, to his style and to his personality, who's one who can coach high-end veteran teams. Mike Babcock's name is out there, Gerard Gallant, but I think Peter Laviolette might be a nice fit there.
Good stuff as always, Scott. Really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You continue to be safe, and we will talk to you down the road.
Anytime, guys.
Scott Burnside, you can go find his work at The Athletic. He covers the National Hockey League. When we come back, we will recap our round one picks, because round one is in the books. Did we get better from the qualifying rounds? Some did. Yeah, actually, we all did. We all got better.
Not to say it wasn't that bad.
No, it was better.
There was nowhere to go but up for a couple of us.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's kind of where I was going with that. You know, there's two of us. There was nowhere to go but up, really. And we'll also make our round two picks. Yes, the round two has started, but we did lock ours in over the weekend via text, so we'll make it official on air because we did make our picks before everything started Saturday night. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in all day this Friday as we will celebrate ESPN 102.5 The Game's 9th birthday. Barrett alluded to that, and this is what I know. This Friday we will do that. Then we will have prizes for you. Yes, loyal listeners, prizes including Predators Winter Classic jerseys, Titans memorabilia, a Nashville SC jersey and scarf, $100 gift cards for Dunkin' Donuts and Party Foul, and much, much more. We'll be giving it away at least one great prize every hour from 6 a.m. on Morning Drive all the way through 6 p.m. So 12 hours every hour. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com. The Game Birthday Party is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com. Looking forward to that. 9 years. I was already in the building at this point. I was in the building 2 weeks prior to the launch. But 9 years we'll be celebrating on Friday. Pretty cool.
Willie joined, 3 months later? November? Because I think I started as an intern around the same time that Willie
did. Sounds about right, yep.
Yeah.
Was not long.
No.
That's correct.
Gosh, hard to believe.
So this show, if my memory serves me correctly, this show has been, obviously you're an OG, Darren, but this show has been around the longest. Like the people in the building, I should say.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. For sure.
Yeah. Wow.
It's not even really close.
Well, I know Jeff has been here. Jeff came around, Jeff Kolb.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the shows.
Yeah, shows, but I'm talking about just personnel.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, I was an intern with Willie and Joe.
Yep.
The Sports Revolution. And afternoons. So, that's fun. We'll reminisce all week. We'll have some moments.
Well, be listening in all seriousness. So those are great prizes. We're going to have great prizes given away all day long starting on Friday. Okay. Quickly, we'll recap the qualifying rounds just so everybody knows where we were. I was 2-6 in the qualifying rounds. Yikes. Willie was 3-5, a tick better. And Chase wins the prize for the qualifying round going 5-3 in the qualifying round. Now, on to round two.
What's up?
Yeah. On to round two. As Willie said earlier, he's right. Really,
which is actually round one.
Actually, this is round one. Excuse me. Round one. We had nowhere to go but up for two of us. So I did go up. Not exactly as high as I, you know, would have liked to have gone, but I still went up. I went 5-3. So 5-3 is better than 2-6 last time I checked. I missed on St. Louis. I did have the Blues in the Knucklehead Series. I was wrong. I had Carolina in the Boston Series. That was bad. That was wrong. And, boy, I really thought Calgary was going to be Dallas. I was wrong. But I won all the rest. So 5-3. Willie goes 6-2. So much improved mark for him as well. So he goes from 3-5 to 6-2. He missed also on Calgary. He, too, also missed on Carolina, but the difference is he had Vancouver. So he had Vancouver, I had St. Louis. Willie goes 6-2, so congratulations on that. Chase was the winner in the qualifying rounds, going 5-3, and he actually improved. He went 6-2 as well. He, too, had Calgary, but he had Columbus over Tampa.
Yep.
And so
I still feel good about it.
Was the difference. So Chase is still the leader in the clubhouse on the picks. Still doing a good job. Now, on to round two. We did lock in our picks over the weekend just so we had it in and we didn't have a game, you know, already in hand on the series. So let's start with, the action. Tonight we'll have Dallas and Colorado. So game two will be tonight. It'll be about an 8:45 puck drop. That'll be on NBCSN, so NBC Sports Network. I took Colorado. They're already down 0-1 in the series. Willie, you had?
I took Dallas.
Willie took Dallas.
His quote was, "And something is telling me to take Dallas, and I know why."
That no, I quote. Don't know why.
Well, you said I know why in the text.
Oh, that didn't come out very right. I did not text correctly on
See?
That.
I'm reading what's there.
It was supposed to read. It was a mistyped.
Okay,
deal.
I thought you had some
insight.
I thought that you and Rads had like met up in Arizona or something.
I did not talk to Rads.
You know, you guys talked or I don't know. I thought you had some inside info.
I thought it was a tease for today. You're going to save it for on air. I just thought
right.
You're going
to unveil. I didn't know if Vern Fiddler had hit you up and said, you know, he had some things to tell you. Okay. So you're supposed to say, I don't know
so
why.
So you don't know why, but you went with Dallas.
I don't know why. Something was telling me. And I think if I could pick it, I think I'm going to go with the structure defensively that Dallas plays with. I think they can frustrate the Avs who want to play at warp speed, zipping up and down the ice. I think Dallas, the way they play, will make that very, very difficult on the Avs, and the Avs might have to get very crafty in how they go about beating them. Man for man, talent-wise, the Avs have it.
Okay. So you go Dallas. Chase, you went?
Colorado.
And didn't you have something did you have a quote too?
Yes. Colorado, 2020 Stanley Cup champions.
Okay.
I stand by that.
Still feel good?
I stand by that, sir.
Okay. All right. Vegas and the Knuckleheads. Did not look good for Vancouver in game one. It's one game. Doesn't count as two losses. You don't lose the series over that, but they got pounded by Vegas. I took Vegas. Willie, what say you?
Can I change my pick?
No.
No.
No, not at all. You did take a V team, but it wasn't Vegas.
I took a, quote, flyer. That was a correct quote on my text chain.
That's another series. That's another series.
And I'm not feeling good. Not feeling good about that flyer at all. They got smoked. There was no contest. Vegas is playing great. I don't like my pick, but I took Vancouver. I gotta go with it.
Okay. Chase?
I took the Vegas Golden Knights. So far, so good.
Okay. That is the Western Conference. So I've got Vegas and Colorado in the Western Conference final. Willie has Dallas and Vancouver. Chase has Colorado and Vegas as well. We move to the East. Tampa and Boston. Tampa did not look good last night. I know it was 3-2, but they just, I don't know.
It took them half a game to get going.
Yeah, well, it took them actually a little bit longer than that, didn't it? Really, it was the third period. Wasn't it?
They got going towards the midway point of the second period. They started looking more like themselves, and I thought that's where Halak was at his best, to keep it 2-0. Then it grew to 3-0. Then they made a nice run at the end to make it close, but that was not Tampa Bay's best.
No, it really was. I did not think the score was indicative of the game at all. In other words, I didn't go, oh, 3-2, well, that was a close. I never felt like Tampa really had a shot at winning that game. And I was disappointed by that because I took Tampa in that series. Willie, you took?
I took Tampa.
You took Tampa.
I also took Tampa.
Ooh. Is John Cooper in big trouble if they lose this?
That's a good question. I think you look at those two teams. This is what I was thinking about during this game. These two teams are dominant teams. It reminds me a little bit of the Predators-Jets series a couple years ago. That if you told me those two teams were in the Stanley Cup final, Boston and Tampa, those are worthy teams. They're as good as anybody. And one of them is going to be out in the second round. No matter how great this series is or whether you're good or bad, There's a team that's going to be out, a great team. These are two really loaded teams, outstanding teams. One of them's going to be out. But I like Tampa's roster.
Yeah.
By the way, since Tuukka Rask opted out, they have not lost a game.
Yeah, they've rallied. You asked this question early in the Columbus series.
Well, I asked at the beginning. I said if they don't beat Columbus again, is – John Cooper out. I felt like he wouldn't survive.
Yeah, I think he would have been out. It depends.
I remember they're playing without Steven Stamkos.
Yeah. I mean, you got to factor that in.
Yeah, but they're picked every year to win the
Stanley
Cup.
It's their highest paid player.
Like, I know, but they're picked every year. It's not like people are like saying, oh, they'll get out of the first. Like, they're picked to win the cup like every year, and they're lucky to get out of the first round. Like, at some point, I get it. Everybody likes John Cooper.
You didn't lose to some chumps. Boston is as good as any team in the league.
Okay, but why does Boston keep beating you? And why then when you're picked to win the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, but Boston, too, before the – and I know it's hard to have this conversation, but before the pause, you got to look at Boston. And then I know they didn't play well in the round robin, but – Boston's a pretty darn good team, even without Tuukka Rask. So, I think his seat could be hot. I think that there could be a, all right, you have to improve or else, and it could be a short leash. But I think if they lose the series, he's back, at least to start the year.
So, we know they got swept by the Blue Jackets last year when they were the President's Trophy winning team. They lost the year before in the conference final, so they did, you know, they did have a good year. They did not even make the playoffs.
In Game 7.
In 16-17 season. Yeah, they lost in Game 7, but nonetheless, they lost. The Capitals went on to win the Stanley Cup. They didn't make the playoffs the year before that. How many years has Cooper been there?
He's been there a good while. He's a heck of a coach. My answer is I would keep him as the coach, but you know how this works.
2013.
People get impatient. They want to change it. He'll have a lot of heat if they lose.
He's been there since 2013.
So the 2013-14 season was his first year?
Yep.
Okay, so they got swept in the first round his first year. Then they lost in the final to the Blackhawks. Then they lost in the conference final to the Penguins in 7 again. Then they didn't make the playoffs. So I guess they've only not qualified one time. And then they lost to the conference final to the Capitals in 7. Then they got swept in the first round by the Blue Jackets. So they've been swept twice in the first round on his watch.
He took over in the 12-13 season.
He took over. Okay, so yep. We won't even count that because they didn't make the playoffs. But that he took over. I'm not even going to count that. And then, you know, here we sit. So, obviously, it kind of feels like boom or bust, right? It's like they've either made a run to the conference final or the Stanley Cup final, or they did make the playoffs, or they got swept in the first round. But you're right. Overall, his body of work is really good. I mean, the 16-17 season was the only year they haven't made the playoffs. But, I mean, they're loaded. But, I mean, I don't know. You're probably right. And I know he's a likable guy. But, gosh, it's like how many more times are they going to just keep having early exits? So, interesting. Okay. So, where were we? We're on now the Philadelphia series against Barry Trotz and the Islanders. It pained me to say this out loud, but I didn't really say it out loud. I just had to type it. I took the Flyers, and that's really hard for me to do, but I did. Willie?
I'm staying with Barry Trotz and the Islanders. I just think their formula is really good. The Flyers, a lot of young players. I think they're to be commended, but this is going to be the best team that they've faced so far. I like the Islanders in this series.
I too went with the Islanders. I am sticking with Trotz and company.
So that is our only difference, Chase, is that series. And Willie, there's a lot of differences. So there's going to be some ground made up. Either I'm going to make up some ground with you, or I'm going to probably definitely finish dead last. This is a big round for me. Willie took Dallas, Vancouver, and the Islanders. I had Colorado, Vegas, and Philadelphia. So we shall see. Should be fun. These should be fun series. All right, we'll come back and put a bow here on Monday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I was reading an article by Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan on ESPN.com, and it does look like, as we just had that conversation with Scott Burnside to kick off this hour, that it seems like all signs are pointing toward a veteran coach for the Capitals. Obviously, with that lineup, that roster, Peter Laviolette has been named, Gerard Gallant has been thrown out there, even Mike Babcock, which seems like a stretch because he's still getting a big pile of money for even like 2 or 3 more years from Toronto. John Stevens is a guy that's been thrown out there. Dan Bylsma has been put out there. Even Bruce Boudreau, who, by the way, I saw him doing some coverage on NHL Network over the weekend.
Yeah.
So that seems to be, it feels like with an experienced team like the Capitals that they probably will get one of those former head coaches. You know, one of those guys that's got lots of experience with lots of teams, right? Most of those guys all have experience. All those guys have experience with multiple teams as a head coach.
Yeah. Peter Laviolette's an interesting one with that. And, you know, a talent like Alex Ovechkin. I do agree with Scott that I could see that being a fit for him. And all the talent that they have there. And, you know, he's been good in those situations, especially early on. He gets to a team and, It's just it's the new voice, and he takes them up another level right away. And obviously, we've seen it trail off, but I could see that working.
I don't see it the way you do. I don't know if you're saying that just because you have familiarity with him and that's the reason you could see that. I mean, all those other guys. I mean, he hasn't really done it with star power guys. His deal is coming in there and doing it with, you know, I don't want to say no name, but he does it with the lesser. True. He gets the most out of the lesser guys. And then, you know, as they get older, they get bigger contracts. I don't think that's when it works for Peter Laviolette.
But when has he
When you say Ovechkin, I mean, that's not really what his claim to fame is, getting the stars, you know, these high-priced superstars to win cups or get to the cup final.
But when has he – I mean, would Giroux be the biggest – one of the biggest stars you could say that he's coached? I mean, PK – yeah, you can put PK in that category.
Yeah, he's had some stars. I think you should look. I mean, it's a mix. I agree with what you're saying, Darren, but I think the overall thing that he would bring to the table, everywhere he's been, he gives you a jump start. He seems to be able to infuse a lot of life in the first few years that he's there, and instantly get people going. I do think it would be a really intriguing thing. Now, they've got some decisions to make, right? Braden Holtby is a free agent. It looks like he's going to be gone. Mm-hmm. But they are going to have Backstrom and Ovechkin and Oshie, the people that they have made the investment in. But that is going to be an interesting program to watch. I'm intrigued about the Laviolette to the Capitals. I would say that that's a possibility there.
Look, I'm not saying it was – the Olympic team versus the Russians. I'm not saying that, you know, he had college kids and he took them to the Stanley Cup final. I'm not painting that picture. I'm just saying typically he's not a guy that has done it with a star-driven roster, right? It's been more about getting the most out of everybody. It's kind of what we talked about with the run in 16 and 17, right? It was, you know, all the guys that we talked about that had an impact in games or series that, you know, the Freddie Gaudreaus and the Pontus Abergs and the Vern Fiddlers and right? And I'm drawing blanks.
It's a fair point.
Z, you know.
Harry's Ownercheck?
Harry's Ownercheck is like those guys, you know. I mean, it's – and I get it. He had star power. There were big names. But when I think about Carolina and Philadelphia and Nashville, it really wasn't about having, you know, this roster full of – you know, like Mike Babcock failed in Toronto. And look at their star power, right? They have names. They had lots of names, and by the way, they still haven't been able to do anything with
it. He had names in Detroit, though.
He had names in Detroit, and it worked.
Yeah. So, I hear what you're saying. Okay, so, I mean, but Gerard Gallant, he obviously, the expansion draft was a lot different than it was when Nashville and others came in, but you can still say, all right, getting them to the Stanley Cup final in the first year is quite an accomplishment. You can't take that away. But then 2.5 years later, he's out. So what's up with that? You know, what does that say? Florida, you know, he kind of came on strong and then he's out. So I guess there's going to be pros and cons for whoever.
No question. Because these guys are out on the streets for a reason, right?
Right. They all got fired. And you see that a lot in the NHL that you know, if you have guys like Barry Trotz that coach in the same place for 15-plus years, that doesn't happen. That just is a very, very rare thing. But even now, you know, you can look and go, all right, he's on his third place, but he's been successful. He won a Stanley Cup in Washington, so that's just a part of hockey. That's just how it goes. So I don't know. I think there are some good names out there for Washington that they can go with, but, you know, they now have to – they got to do it again. I mean, it took them so long to win a Stanley Cup. Barry Trotz does that. They still move on. And now you see them eliminated in the first round for two straight years. So with Alex Ovechkin and a talent like that, you would think there would be more than one Stanley Cup banner in the rafters, but there's not.
I just saw where the Pirates have claimed right-hander Carson Fulmer off waivers. So
he has been
a
mystery. It's hard to figure him out. He got a new address in Detroit, which I thought would be a great fresh start for him, and it didn't go well there. So now you go to Pittsburgh. Hopefully somebody can unlock his best. He's a guy that I really thought would be a very good. I thought he would be a reliever, but the White Sox tried over and over to make him a starter. It didn't, which of course he was a dominant starter at Vanderbilt, but I just think his makeup cries short reliever to me, but he just hasn't been able to get it all together. So yeah. Hopefully this is the place.
Yes, and also, did you see where Mike Tatoyan put, he tweeted at us, Chase on game versus DMAC underscore 1025 versus Willie D 1025. Let the racing begin at the Nashville Super Speedway. Be quite entertaining. Looking forward to seeing this happen.
Yeah, he's going to need to be careful with this. Because
yeah,
really. I know that Willie knows how we are and that we'll be competitive with each other. And I do not want a situation where we're having to explain to people why our cars are all banged up because we were
scraped up on the side.
What happened? Well, they let us race on the speedway, and Darren and I got a little too aggressive.
Okay, in all seriousness, though, this is a perfect segue as we kind of put a bow on today's show. You brought this up in our interview back in the second hour of the show, that there is a scuttlebutt out there about IndyCar trying to get back to Nashville on a possible Grand Prix race.
Well, so that would be that would be different. Grand Prix is more of like a road course. But the IndyCar getting back here, in general, or being back at the Super Speedway on an oval, I think would be something that they should definitely pursue. I would hope.
But this is talking about a street race, and I think in like downtown, right?
Yeah. Right.
They're talking about maybe next year.
Huh.
That would be interesting, though, wouldn't it?
That'd be pretty crazy.
I
got a question for
and
you.
It's close to a done deal. Because
you think that's a done deal for like next August is what's being thrown out there?
Yeah, they're finalizing. They're finalizing a deal for that. I know that's been out there, but I've heard that for a while. Because I even think one of the times we had Joseph on, he brought it up that had been rumor. But it's I know the Tennessean has a story on it, but the IndyCar officials are coming to Nashville to check it out, and I believe that that's close to being done. But that wouldn't be at the Speedway. What I was bringing up with him was because I never got to go to that race. I know you guys did, but having the IndyCar series on the oval at the Super Speedway, I think would be really cool. So again, that ties into what we were talking about.
Is that being talked about again?
I haven't. I just asked him that if he.
Okay,
knew,
I was going to say I have not heard that.
But that would tie into the same thing we're talking about with NASCAR, that you could have two races in the same market at two different places, have the Grand Prix race, the road race that IndyCar has been known to do, and then have a race on the oval. I think that'd be a ton of fun. And you would get the turnout. I just hope that they negotiate.
I always thought that the
races
IRL was a great first-class event. I just really enjoyed the personalities, the accessibility. Not that it was any better necessarily than the NASCAR. They were always great too. And of course, we had one level down in the NASCAR, right? We had the up and comers and not the top of the top. But man, I just really enjoyed the vibe of the IRL.
Yep.
And in watching the Indy 500 yesterday, I did with a star, like in Nashville and Joseph Newgarden. I mean, that would be a good fit. It would work well. And I still, this is maybe a question for tomorrow, Chase. I don't know why. I don't know what the rules are. But I watched the end. I was hoping that Newgarden was going to make a late charge there. It looked like he was positioning himself. And then the wreck happened. And then they end the race on a caution where the announcers were saying they're going to stop at red flag here so they can finish with a new start with three laps to go. I don't know why they didn't do that.
Disappointing.
I don't know if it would have been taking too long to repair the damage of the tire wall there. But
it was a pretty bad wreck.
Yeah, I hate races ending under caution. Can't stand it.
I know. All right, it is closing time. Good way to end today's show. Fast-moving show. It'll be fast-moving again tomorrow. Stay safe. Enjoy the rest of your day. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.